Okay, so let's talk about stuff with Electric. It's an honor to be able to work with you guys. Just a tiny bit about my background, because we'd rather talk about guitar than me, but who am I? I am currently worship leader, worship pastor at Christ Community Church in Daytona Beach, Florida, where I've been for about a month. Before that, I was professor of music at Cedarville University for 3 years. Before that, I was out in Los Angeles just doing music stuff, studying in grad school, University of Southern California, hardcore guitar, amazing resources out there, and just doing a lot of gigging and a lot of playing, and was a part of the ministry at Grace Community Church, John MacArthur's church out there, with the Enfield group. That was, you know, I was part of that until I moved. So now I'm like a sub guy, but just that was like, you know, the college group there, and that just kind of grew out of serving there, and really gave me. I would consider like what I'm doing right now at the church. I've told this to the pastor too. At like 10 years ago, I would have considered it like a huge compromise of my artistic direction and training and stuff. But God really changed my heart through, and my direction, through just being involved at the church, through meeting guys like Bob Coughlin, and just the impact of the ministry and the thoughtfulness, and just serving in these churches and stuff. Just a real love for serving the church, where I'd so much rather be than just at like a place in a guitar program doing that kind of a thing and just performing, to you know, be working with people, either at a church or, you know, a Christian university, maybe. But just in a location where I can really pour into people who are pouring back into the church. Because a lot of places, we don't have a lot of musical resources in the church. And a lot of guitarists, even though, you know, we love our gear and we love to play and we're always practicing and stuff, tend to not really know our way around the neck as well as maybe like a keyboard player would. And so we find ourselves kind of stuck with ideas, or maybe some, like our bag of tricks, or really sort of fishing for notes sometimes, or wishing that we could do a little bit more. So anyways, just grew to love being a part of all that. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am. I said before in the other sessions too, this can be pretty difficult, because there's probably, you know, someone just starting out to someone who has like, you know, a lot of boutique gear, has been playing for a long time or something. And I'm going to try to kind of communicate things at a basic level, but also hopefully some challenging, you know, stuff too, so that everyone can get something, but, you know, that no one's kind of left behind. But it's tricky in a group like this. I was asking people before, is there anything like you don't want to leave here without kind of like addressing? You had a question back there? I do sometimes. I tend to have to really trust my band to lead with Electric, because you just want to go back to acoustic to be able to really control the tempo and the rhythm and stuff. But if I really trust my rhythm section, bass and drums, I feel like I can back up and, you know, I can back off and just do like the. You know, just the extra sort of color stuff, and then drive a little bit more later, but you kind of have to have that solid bass. It is kind of tricky. There have been times with some of our arrangements, some of the Enfield stuff, like our Churches One Foundation, has this lead line, and then this solo in it that I didn't really have a guitar player, like where I was, who could play that, and so I would lead it, take the solo, do the intro things, and sing. And you have to really practice that. And maybe you should just change the arrangement in that sense. But because there have been some times where it's just really hard to do that thing while you're, you know, singing. And that's, when you're leading, it's way more important to lead well than it is to, I shouldn't say to play well, but you know what I mean, hopefully. But yeah, I will lead from Electric. Thing I love about Electric, I kind of think of it as like a super acoustic in some ways, in that it just has a lot of sustain. Your open voice stuff can work really well, really well. It's not like you always have to be out of here, or else you have to be ashamed about yourself. But it really pulls out the detail. Like on sometimes, I think it was All I Have Is Christ. Sometimes, you know, just drop down and it gets really big. I just like to go down to these voicings and sort of pick through the chords. All I have. you know, create a part down low that really kind of pokes through. And electric just speaks really well that way. But yeah, I will lead from it if I, you know, have some other players. There was a situation a couple weeks ago, because it's in the middle of the summer, and you know how your teams tend to drop off a little bit. People are on vacation. And I'm like the new guy at the church, and everybody was gone except for the drummer. And so I thought, well, we could still try it. And so we did, and I tried it with acoustic, but it just wasn't working. So I could really use electric in specific ways that it just carried more. So it was just electric and drums. And so I could do more bassline stuff, and I could do high sustaining things, and it kind of worked. Not ideal, but it sort of worked. But yeah. Anything else? Things? Because I can probably fold that into stuff if I want to talk about.
I've noticed, especially with the band this morning and a little bit last night, that a lot of times they follow the words and have high impact moments, like a big build-up,
mm-hmm.
coming out of a section to bring it down. What are the, in both of those cases, what would be the one thing that you would tell your electric guitarist? What's the best trick or bag of tricks that you have for that?
That's a good question. You know, definitely like at the end of a big section or end of an instrumental when you want to bring it back down, sometimes you do a hard stop and just everyone gets out articulating what beat you want to have that on. Sometimes, you know, it's good to be able to articulate that. You realize sometimes, okay, let's do a cut here on beat. I have no idea. Hold on a second, you know, you kind of work that out. But yeah, you know, you hear a lot of like eighth builds, you know, who can feel the nails upon his hands. Bearing all the guilt of sinful man, you know, drop to kind of the eighth thing, you know, the palm muting thing to sort of sneak it in, gradually open it up. That kind of a thing can be really useful. End of big sections, to make sure to tell people, kind of wind it down, make sure you get out so that, you know, you're just sort of sustaining over the end of this, and make sure, you know, if it changes chords, you're not hanging over too much because it can really start to clash and things. So, I mean, just off the top of my head, I'll probably think of more as we go on because that's our lives every Sunday. It's not so much like, try this great idea, try this great idea. It's more putting out fires. But... yeah, anything else?
Are you always playing with a little bit of delay on?
I am, yeah. Probably a good place to start. I think one of the main things that I want to hit for sure, what time do we end? 3:45, okay. One thing that I always find fascinating, and I always want to know from players that I you know, they do some stuff that I like. I want to know, how do you think of the neck? How do you move around and stuff? What are your kind of go-to things? So we can talk. I want to talk about that for sure, and some ways that are really useful, some tools for you with chords, but also some probably different ways than you've practiced scales before, and thought about that, and chords and things too. So, but gear is another important thing. I kind of break it up into two sections of main ideas, like the stuff that we play, and then the way that we sound. Because if we sound awful when we play awesome stuff, it's not good. And if we sound great when we play awful stuff, you know, it kind of cancels each other out. So yeah, what I'm using here, this is, and again, you don't need, and I'll sort of fold in your question about basic rig stuff. You don't need the fanciest gear, but, you know, a nice guitar is probably the most important thing that, you know, you should have. This is actually a guitar made by a maker in LA who just lovingly carves the necks, winds the pickups, does all this stuff. And, you know, he does the kind of distressing sort of a thing. He says, just for the way that it feels, you know, he really kind of rubs down the neck and stuff, and it just is a really comfortable guitar, kind of modeled after the, you know, the early 50s Tele styles. And you get someone with either an acoustic or electric that's actually handmade it, and it's just like in another sort of stratosphere with your amps. It's kind of amazing. But you don't need that. It's a good reminder, especially for us electric players, coming from working in big churches, gigantic churches in LA with tons of resources, to a tiny little church plant in Dayton, Ohio, where we had like nothing. It was me and the pastor on acoustic sometimes, and sometimes just me. You get a sense that we don't really need like all this stuff, you know, at the core, and it's just good to remember that, because we can kind of get like, okay, we need it to sound a certain way, or it's not like gripping us to engage in worship or something, and that's, you know, that's not true. That's a good reminder. But anyways, a good guitar can be fantastic, well, is awesome. This is an LSL Instruments guitar. Lance Lehrman is his name. He's in LA. he's developed quite a bit, his website. Now he even like sells his pickups and stuff, which are really cool. Will, the other guitar player in Enfield, has like used his pickups in a guitar and stuff. So anyway, it's just a Tele-style guitar. I made a couple of these cables. One of them went bad. But I'm just running into... for guitars, you know, you could... don't spend the cheapest amount that you can, because it'll be something that tends to frustrate you and keep you from playing if you're starting there. But you can do plenty good with like an Epiphone, you know, whatever, or like the Mexican Strats or Teles. Upgrade some parts, and that can be a really, really good guitar. I have a guitar my friend calls the Gipsophone. It's an Epiphone. Everything's been like gutted on it and replaced and stuff, and it's a great guitar. It's one of the kind of like the 335 styles. But you can get... I've constantly surprised, happily surprised by, you know, the musicians we'd bring into the university as like special guest artists. You know, we got like Gateway and Phil Wickham and all these other guys to come. But this one guy came in and he had this pedal board with all these Boss pedals on it. And then we realized he was going straight out of a pod. We're like, oh, great. But he sounded incredible. He sounded awesome. Lincoln Brewster, you know, allegedly goes out of his pod, and I've seen him do it, and actually he sounds pretty decent. Live, he's kind of amazing of a player. But I had a student who was just going out of the little Boss ME50, I think it is, just the little version of those bigger ones, and he sounded really good. In fact, when he got a pedal board and some cheaper pedals, I liked the other thing better. So you don't have to spend the most amount possible, but you don't want to waste your money either. So with the guitars, there's that. The basic pedal setup that I have, and what I think is, well, I'll tell you what I have. Into a tuner, into a compressor, the Wampler kind of ego compressor. I like the that it had like a blend, so you can, you know, blend back in your Klietsiegel, or totally compressed, totally wet or totally dry, if you know what that means. Full compressed signal or full clean signal or a mixture of the two. So that just is extra stuff you can do with it, but you don't have to. Lots of them don't have that. Tuner, the compressor, into probably my favorite overdrive pedal, which is this Tim pedal. They're not that expensive. They're like $170 shipped, but it'll take you 6 months to get them because you got to get on a waiting list. And I honestly forgot that I ordered it until I got an email from them that, hey, your Tim's ready. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, he's not making them anymore? Even like the Timmies and stuff?
He's making Timmies, but not.
Okay. Who wants to buy this? I'm just kidding. yeah. For the low price. There are lots of great overdrives. So many great overdrives. You could almost just like reach into a bin of good overdrives, pull out any of them, and they would be great for you. You know, there is matching it with your amp or your guitar, and there's subtleties like that, but for general worship styles and just pop styles too, you're going to go a long, long way with some sort of tube screamer type. That is just a classic overdrive pedal that has a characteristic kind of mid-range bump. If you think about like an EQ, like you've seen on your stereo or something like that, and you can sort of move around the mid-range, the high range, the low range, and things like that. It kind of has a mid-range bump, which is characteristic to the sound of that. It's just a real warm, nice, full sound. The TS9s are good versions of that, inexpensive. The Voodoo Labs Sparkle Drive has a nice blend on it. The Full Tone Full Drive is a really good pedal. It has a boost on it, too. So those can be great ones. I happen to have this Tim. It's just a really clean-sounding one. You can, with your pedals, when you're setting the EQs, you really want to make it sound like your guitar. Hopefully you like the sound of your guitar at first. And so I might tweak that a little bit, but you want it to sound like to sound like your instrument. And so really with your, even on your amp and stuff, like sweep, like go all the way over on the tone knob and all the way to the other side, because like there's probably a fair amount of you with pedals who haven't done that before, just kind of like, oh, I'll move it there and now it's working. But you know, just sweep it. What does it sound this way? What does it sound like that way? I find the best kind of guide for me for that has been to use your ears and to set it every single time. I have the power supply in rooms can affect that differently. So you wonder why, if the exact same settings, you just sort of sound different today. All that's, you know, it's weird what can cause that. I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old who love the pedal board. And it's just like, I love watching them just come over and do this. It's, you know, you get quickly unattached to anything that you just had set up on there. And you get good at sort of using your ears and fixing it again. And that's really good because you'll go into a different space and you'll have a different sound. You'll come to a conference and you'll be playing through an amp that you've never seen before. And you'll have to just, you know, tweak your sound and really work on it. So using your ears like that and really experimenting with that, like the sweeps and your knobs and things, is good. I have that right now into an OCD. I haven't had this on the board for a long time. I tend to like swap out the second. I have two overdrives on here, and some people have more. I really love, anyone know like Michael Landau? He's a really great like fusion studio guitar player, just amazing sound. I love his sound, so I've been experimenting with like different boosts and stuff like that. But I mostly just use the Tim, like that's all I use today. From that, I go into this pedal called the Freeze, which I hesitate to even mention because it's not, it's kind of a more like, you know, Electroharmonics is a company that makes really cool stuff that you sort of wonder, how am I going to use this? But it's awesome. This Freeze pedal just freezes the sound. That doesn't sound that great on its own, but I'll send it through my reverb pedal. That kind of sort of, you know, covers it a little bit. Sometimes I'll, you know, record that, loop it, drop it an octave, layer other stuff on the top of it. And now it sounds a little fuller sounding and stuff. But that's just experimental stuff. That's not, like, necessary sorts of things. But I have that Freeze pedal. The violinist had, like, the newer version of that, like the Super Ego, which has a bunch of stuff you can do. But anyways, that's not one of your... like, I'm buying pedals, what should I get pedal? I would recommend for that, just like starting out, tuner, overdrive, delay. I mean, you can get a long ways with just tuner, overdrive, and delay. So I've got that basic overdrive, just the Tim mostly. It's got a boost on it. So I can get a little bit more when I, you know, want different kind of layers of overdrive, because it's good to have multiple layers of it, so you can do those kind of things. I took my volume pedal off. I kind of want it back on, but I took it off. I just kind of stripped the pedal board of anything that I didn't absolutely use all the time. And I use my volume knob a lot for what I use the volume pedal for. And with your basic overdrive setting, you can roll off just a little bit on your volume knob, and that limits what's going into the amp. And that cleans up your sound a little bit. And it's good to have different shades of your overdrive levels. And that's kind of what I'm going for there. That with the boost is great for me. Into this delay pedal. Any delay pedal will work. I like to have a tap tempo. So you can do, you know, little delay tricks and stuff. And the old analog or tape stuff didn't necessarily have that. Some of the new pedals, like the Strymon stuff, is really incredible. There are lots of good delay pedals, too. JHS, you can get the Boss, what's it, the DD20, is a fantastic double pedal. For a lot of beginners, I recommend like the Line 6 DL4 because it has the different three presets that you can just save settings for. And you like, it's good to have. You asked about, do I always have a little bit of delay? Yeah, I usually do have a tiny bit of delay on there. But I'll have, so I use this delay pedal, and then I have something that controls the delay pedal, and so I have like five different settings of different things. So, you know, this is like multiple, it's like having two delay pedals, a setting there. This one is sort of a tremolo one, not loving it. This is like a dotted eighth thing. We can talk about to a longer delay and a shorter delay, and I generally leave the short delay on all the time. It just kind of works well for what I was doing this morning. Just leaves a little bit of a trail going on afterwards, as opposed to being completely dry like that. I just find it a little more inspiring to have a little bit of something around the sound. So just a little bit of delay. A good way to, you know, check how long your repeats are is just scratch the neck. That's pretty low. Into reverb pedal. That's the Blue Sky, Strymon Blue Sky, which I just really like. I tend to use that mostly. I have that on in general here. So you can hear just a little bit of like, I have it turned up a little bit higher than usual, but a little bit of space in the sound. as opposed to just dry like that. And this is the one that I use for swells. I was just, usually people do that with delay, but I just crank the length of the delay trail, or the reverb trail, so it sounds like that. And you can just swell into that. And get a lot of like these sort of ambient sounds. This one has some sweet settings, which sort of sells everybody on it, but I never use this one anymore. Yeah. Oops. This sort of shimmer sound, which is sweet, but I end up just kind of using some of the more basic settings. So that's basically my setup. But if you were just starting out, a tuner is really important because you have to sound good with whatever you play. And overdrive and delay. There's lots you can build on from there. Power supply, a cheap one is the One Spot. It's $30. You know, I ran into problems with that with multiple pedals, but that's a really good option. You can also get more expensive versions that isolate your power supplies to the pedals instead of using batteries, and that's like the Voodoo Labs Pedal Power, or there's like the DC Brick or something. And I just found that to be a little bit better with multiple pedals. I like these pedal train boards. There's nothing flashy about them. They're angled kind of nicely. They have the slats. You can put cables underneath. They're not that expensive. You can get the hard cases with them, which are really good for travel. They have a lot of different sizes and stuff. You could build your own. There, you can get really fancy ones that light up and all sorts of things. But I just like the simplicity in it. But yeah, I recommend getting a board of some sort so you don't have to set your stuff up every single time, because that can be time consuming. And you can make lots of mistakes if you're tired. So yeah, that's my basic setup. Do you have any questions about that?
On your compressor and overdrive, and you say you've got your amp set where you want it.
Yeah, usually.
How far or how much compression or overdrive do you use?
Just sort of until I can notice it for the compression. You know, compression, I'm going to post this. It's the best explanation of compression. Using compression is like the pedal that people really think they need, but they don't really know what it does. But I'm supposed to have one. It really evens out your playing. It's sort of like just a ceiling to your levels. So anything that goes beyond that, it kind of squashes in a sense. But it can add sort of a thickness to your sound too, because every string that it's cutting across, you know, it's sort of raising the level of each one of those. And so it can add sort of a something to your sound. It can make your arpeggio is really even and stuff, and so there's just kind of a nice sort of sheen that I like with that. I heard a guy describe how he likes, you know, when you're able to play through an amp, this is the guy who was playing through a pod, he was awesome. He likes the feeling of what you would get from compression with a tube amp cranked up. I don't usually play with a tube amp cranked up, so that brings to amps, you know, tube amps, who likes solid states better? Okay, settled. Yeah. Yeah, general tube amps, cheap ones could be like a Blues Junior or an AC-15, Fender Blues Junior. Those are great, usable little amps that are smaller wattage, which is kind of what you want, sort of like this one. You can turn it up higher, get more of that, you know, tone that you're looking for, like a Twin or something, which I have and I actually love. You'd have to blow your head off with it before you're getting it up to the level of natural overdrive. So, anyways. but overdrive, the way I use it, is I sort of try to emulate a little bit of a cranked amp, because I don't often work in the situation where I can crank the amp. And so I like to have, just on the edge of dirt, that reacts to your playing level. And a good pedal will do that. You know, it's a really, sometimes if you have an amp and you can just crank it when no one's around, it's a really beautiful sound, just the overdrive that comes from that. Put in earplugs first, though. But yeah, so that I can have sort of like a cleanish sound. I can roll back a little bit if I need to. But if I need to, if I dig in, I can do that. So something that's a little bit flexible there. Also, sometimes I'll use like the straight clean sound if I really want that. But usually I have just a tiny bit of like dirt on it to sort of emulate like the thing that's good about having a cranked amp. And then I have the boost there too, or I'd have another overdrive pedal that I could have another layer of it for something, for really big chords, or like a line that really needed a lot of power behind it. So yeah, that's how I use that one. Any other kind of gear question things?
Could you, how many
Yeah, let's talk about ambient playing. Let's fold this into how I think about kind of, I think I, in my head, I just think of like painting with color kind of things and being able to move throughout the neck. So this will get us into voicings and stuff. But yeah, you can do two things kind of here. A lot of people will use delay to get, I could just do a swell like this. And the guy last night was doing it where he had one finger wrapped around the guy who was shredding our faces off for that blues tune. He was, I think he had like a finger wrapped around volume and was sort of like playing with his thumb, like the melody note, melody line, and sort of, you know, going in and out with that. The strats are great for that. Or this has kind of like a tight volume knob, so that would be a little harder. But you can do just a little swell, like pick a voicing up high, and we can talk about the ones that I like, and sort of do that. And he would do this, and this is just something that's cool to do, is just kind of keep shaking it, and you get kind of that wiry sort of continuous sound. Once it dies, can be cool. Maybe not for every single style, but you can just you can do that. But when you try to do something else, it's gone. And maybe that's a part of like what you're doing. But I like to have a little bit of a trail. This is kind of a lot of a trail. So I'll have that, and that's with my reverb cranked, and it's this Blue Sky pedal that just happens to work well that way. Lots of people will use delay, and just very quickly, you take like a delay patch, and you would crank the repeats to a point that would be unusable as a line, like, oh, and raise the mix too. That helps. You know, it's still going. It gets really messy really quickly. Oh, I left that on. Okay, so I'm cranking the mix or the effect level, and I'm cranking the repeats. And what you do is take a chord, swell in, and then you can get out of it, and you'll get kind of the delay trail because you're not giving it your attack, so it's not grabbing onto that constant hit. But it's just kind of extending the sound of your swell. And so if you don't have a reverb pedal that it works on, not all do, that works really well as a delay trick. And you can change how long that trail is by how many repeats you have. So you can play with that. Sometimes you get like a little bit of a wah, wah, wah sound. And I found that, actually I was talking with our other guitar player, Will, about it. Something like that to sort of keep feeding in, get out, feed in the sound, and sort of feed the sound in over and over again. And it helps kind of solve that a little bit. But you really have to practice it, because you'll be there and you'll be like halfway up with your volume pedal and you'll do that in the middle of it. Or you'll wait too long, you know, and you won't have that powerful of a swell. Or you'll go too quickly and you'll really get that sort of sound, that sort of rushing of the sound. So it does take a lot of practice. So there's like kind of how I do it. Now, the stuff that I think about a lot with these are these smaller chord shapes throughout the neck. Probably a lot of you know power chords, and I don't want to go through necessarily, like, these are all listed in this packet. In fact, on the website, did I mention the website? No. Okay. This is hard. A lot of people, a lot of different levels and stuff. We got a short amount of time. I would much prefer like a private lesson, you know, to do this. And so I created this gigantic packet. It's like somewhere around here. It's like 60-some pages that has just a ton of voicings for the stuff for acoustic and electric that I really love, and some scale stuff too. And it was too expensive to print out for this. It would have been over $1,000. And so on my website up there, patrickandersonguitar.com, there is, I need the caveat of, we just moved to Florida. We have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. And in fact, we're moving this week to a house that we bought. My wife is there on her own. So there's only one post up on that. There's not even a bio up. There is one post for you all, and it has the PDF to this packet, as well as a couple parts of that broken out of it, so you can just go to the triad section or something. So that's on that website. Visit that. Let me know if you have any trouble with it. My email address is right here, too, paguitar@mac.com. I am usually, you know, I do a lot of teaching. I have done a lot of teaching. I usually charge for that, but I'm free for the weekend for the rest of the time we're here. If you just want to talk about this stuff and practice it, and we can sit through it, and I can show you like some really great ways that would help you beyond what we can talk about here. And I'm willing to just, you know, talk through it. I've been talking for some people with, like, over the last couple of years since the last Worship God, and I'm happy to converse and just kind of help out any way that I can. So check out the website for, and go to blog. There's, like, training. Don't go to training. Go to blog, and there's that one post for you with that. So, but I tend to use power chord voicings, which just have, like, a really clean, sort of pure sound. And you probably know, like, you know, a lot of those. I really like to use the smaller versions of them across the neck, like even higher up on the neck. So, there's a page in the sort of the power chord section that has these little two-note power chords. If you want to use a fancy theory word, they're called dyads, because two notes, triads, three notes. I won't say that again. Anyways, that's that. They're just two small little, you can do single note swell kind of things, and that can work, but I like sometimes the way that two notes sort of rub against each other and sort of kind of have a little bit of grit to the sound. And so two notes there, and you can see on this, and a power chord, a tiny little theory moment, just as a chord without the third, basically, you have a chord just stripped down completely is just a root, a third, and a fifth, three notes, called a triad. The power chord leaves out the third, has a really hollow kind of a sound. And that's why it works so well for, you know, like overdrive and stuff. Instead of maybe... That third is more of a complex sound, although you could use it in ways that it would sound good too. But anyways, let's not do that. Okay, so there's a section in the power chord part of the packet where you'll go into these little two-note voicings all over the neck. And let me just show you a couple that are really useful. This one and this one, they're the same chord. With chords, you can mix up the notes. It's like if you could take your name and just mix up the letters in your name and it would still be Devin. You know, but it's spelled starting with an N or something like that, which doesn't work with language, but it works with chords. And you can just switch them all up, and it's called inversions and stuff. You don't have to worry about that if that is not interesting to you. But, you know, there's going to make a case for theory really helping you out, and there's practical elements of it that are really, really helpful. So anyways, here's one G. Here's another G. They have different notes. They have a melodic component to them, and so that's kind of important, actually. Someone was asking before, but... I put a little open circle on where the root is, and this gets to another thing we'll sort of talk about, because a lot of guitar players sort of suffer from not really knowing their way around the neck beyond a couple of shapes that you feel comfortable with. So there's this one and this one. The root happens to be, you can see it in the packet. In fact, I can just sort of draw it on the board for you too. I'll make 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And this is the 7th fret. And none of the other strings are open. Again, on electric, you just have a lot of sustain and a lot of power. And so you can do these things higher up, and they'll really sound good. And so let's do something. Let's make some little quick little thing. Oops, shortest song ever. Just something for us to go with here. Oops. No, I can't do that. Okay. I'll use that sound a lot, or the other one. And these are all listed for you, but just to give you the other one. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This goes from here to here, I think. And these are both G chords. And these have a really pure sound, no third. They speak really well. You notice I have like two places where I can play them. And so you can get up out of the range that the other players are. That's one thing. You listen to any pop music that you like, any of the, you know, good recordings that you like, worship music included, They're really separating the parts. You're mindful of where you're playing. If you have the piano player playing here, one day I sat down with our piano player and I said, John, you know, where do you drive when you're just like you're really going for it in a song? He said, oh, you know, around here. And I was like, okay, where are those notes? Oh, that's my G chord. You know, so we're like really in the same zone when we're doing that. And even like this right here, which seems high up on the neck, these are the same two notes as these, which is back down there. And this looks like a huge amount. That's an octave on the guitar. An octave on the piano is you can do with one hand. There's no way we could do that. So it's a little bit deceptive, like the length on the guitar. But creating parts that get up out of the range of where other people are, and that's where electric really comes in well and kind of sustains and speaks a little bit better, I think, than acoustic oftentimes. But those are two voicings I use a lot. You can also break it up and use it kind of melodically. That's without changing anything, but there are notes around those that are really useful. If I could do this around that you could play and sort of fill in. You can use that to create simple little parts. If you're kind of more a beginner with this stuff, you can take these two shapes and they're like your secret to coming up with parts. That's more of a memorable little part. It's not, you know, I'm not going to win a Grammy for it, but it's, you know, it's got to be careful when you're creating a part to not, and it's something that we guitarists, it's just easy to do because we love our instruments and music and stuff. It's just sort of noodle and, you know, that's not a part. That's like a solo or something. So to think with these little things, or something like that. You make up whatever you want. For those of you who are maybe ready for this, with those notes from here, you have sort of like, I call it a power chord scale. And you can really like harmonize a melody line. And do something like, and it just has a little bit more girth to it. But that's just kind of talking about those voicings and how useful those tiny little voicings are. Those are also here. You can play them all over the neck. So I could do a progression, not doing my like low stuff, not even doing my big old fat power chords, but something like... coming up with an interesting part like that. So the sheet that has these two note voicings on it, you want to check out. It's really useful. The other thing would be triads. And a triad is just a chord. It's a three note chord, just stripped down. Like when we do something like this, we're playing like 2.5 G chords right here. Or like this E chord is power chord on the bottom. Three E triads, you know, it just fills it out in a power chord on the bottom. So a basic triad would sound like this on guitar. Well, let's go back to this, our song. It gets harder as you go higher on the neck just to stay in tune. And so a little bit of vibrato. I love to just do this with the neck. It gives you a little bit of a warble that not just avoids being in tune, but just gives it a little bit of character. So my students would say, you do that all the time. You know, just kind of, you know, bending the neck just a tiny bit. And do you want me to draw like a couple of the triads? Would that be useful? Okay. These are meticulously noted in the packet also because I wanted to give you stuff to walk away with because I know that, you know, Craig is going to have another awesome message or whoever's speaking next and you just like all this stuff's going to go out because you got more sessions to go to. So it's hard to remember and take in if we're not like practicing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2. Okay, let's take C. This would be good because we can apply it to some of the songs this morning. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And there are three. Here's an interesting little guitar fact. If you're playing a chord on guitar, however many notes you're playing, fingerings you're using for, well, notes you're playing. If it's a three-note chord, you're going to have three different versions up and down the neck, movable. If you have a four-note chord, you're going to have four different versions up the neck. If you have a two-note chord, like this one, you can only have one note as the bass and the other note not, and then you can switch them. So there's only, you know, two possibilities. So with these three-note chords, you have three. And these, I'll play you a bunch of examples of songs that they come from, and you'll recognize all of them. This is eight, I believe. No, this is eight. Okay. And two, three, four, five, six. And like I said, these are meticulously noted out for you in the packets. And then let's do this one right here. Okay, this is 12. All right, these are all C chords. And when I talk to my students, when I think about how I want to like approach the guitar, I want this whole thing to be a C chord for me. I want this whole thing to be like a C scale for me, or whatever I need for it to be, so that I can react to what's going on, so I can, you know, you're recording something, or you're just, I don't want to say recording, because not maybe a lot of people do that, but all the time you have to react and try a different idea, or your worship leader says, could you do something higher, and you don't want to say, I only know one shape, or the D shape, or something we're talking about. And so these are triads right here. And they have, a triad has the third in it, so you don't have to remember that, but just remember it has like a brighter sound. And this will fold back into the ambient question too, because I use these. You hear how that's different from this? Or this? It has that color in it. You know, we could have the minor versions too, which are all in the packet. But today, My Redeemer's Love, I would use some of these shapes with some variations. And these can be great sort of high-end chords that you can do just to kind of brush. Like, let's go back to G for a second. And they all move around. They stay the same, but they move around for different keys. So, you know, you start coming up with a high part or something higher. And they're just, you know, you can go here, you can go here, you can go here, you can go back up here. You can go on the inner strings. They're also there. They're shaped a little differently. And you can mess around with them a lot and sort of change notes. The outsides of some of the shapes, here's a little theory thing, create sixths, which are really melodic. I was doing that and just harmonize a single melody line like a power chord will harmonize a single melody line. But let's go back to these. These triads are great. I mean, you've heard them time and time again with... something like that. Those are those high chords, or... couple Hillsong examples, because if you can take any chord progression, let's take G, D, sus, C, G. That sounds way different than. And there are so many combinations of that throughout the neck. I want to get through a couple more things, but. We can talk about how to practice that too. Is this any questions with the stuff? Is this like totally over anybody's head? Do you want to go into some like harder ways of practicing this? Yeah?
Were you using a triad on the second verse of Behold Our God?
Maybe. Okay. Those are great. yeah. I didn't think about how that would sound. What's his name? Neil would do that a lot last night because it lets you sort of comp. That's just a fancy word for accompanying, playing chords, comping, throughout the neck. So I can do stuff like, let's go back to our song. You know. You know, I can create chords throughout the neck. These are all G's and C's. And as you learn these, you don't have to play every note of them. One thing with these chords, these are great guides for your soloing because they're just like a safe spot for the notes sound good. And if you don't really know how to move around that much with them at first, you can just take and play the chord of the key you're in. Like you're in the key of G right here over all the chords. It'll sound good over almost everything except for maybe one chord, which it sounds pretty good anyways, Homer still. So you can just hang on one of these chords up high, and it's just a cool layer of a sound. You don't have to play all the time. You want to create kind of a hook of a part that's memorable, that's interesting, that's not noodly and easily forgettable. But these triads are really useful. I can even slide in with them a lot, or slide in with them, kind of use the ambient stuff with, let's see. They're just a little brighter sounding to me than just a straight power chord. That's a straight power chord kind of shape. Here's sort of this triad shape. It's a little warmer sounding, which is exactly what you want sometimes. And you might be, how do you memorize all this stuff? It's like developing a vocabulary. You just want to, you know, practicing, it can seem overwhelming with a lot of new ideas and stuff. Especially if you're kind of stuck or maybe just starting out. But practicing is just consistency over time. You've probably noticed that you've gotten better just from playing every week. That's because that's consistency over time. And if you bump that up just a little bit to 5 minutes a day, 3 or 4 times a week, you're going to start noticing not the biggest difference, but a noticeable difference. If you amp that up to a half an hour, 3 or 4 times a day, or 3 or 4 times a day, 3 or 4 times a week, I mean, you could do a whole lot more than that. You start really to, accruing this knowledge. And I'm going to tell you, it's like learning a language. It's sort of a pain. Once you've already learned to speak and stuff, and like having little kids, I think about like kids learning to walk, and I think about, you know, us learning things as adults. Probably like half of us would never learn to walk if we had to do it when we're like 24 or 37 or something like that, just because like, it's such a pain, man. This is practice. And so with this stuff, it's like a language. It's hard until it just clicks. And it will do that over time. And over time, it just kind of seeps more and more together, and it just kind of like marinates in your brain, and you'll start seeing new relationships all over the neck. And so I really encourage you to stick with that. So I'll use those triads, and I'll use these little power chord shapes, which are all over the neck. Don't let that discourage you. Just pick a couple that you like. Pick one. A good way to practice this would be to take one chart. And there's, you know that you encounter minor chords in your songs as well. So there's the minor shape right next to the major shape in the packet. Let's see if I have this just really fast so you can sort of see it. It's right here. Yeah, here's just, you know, this little shape. Here's the chords that I was just playing. First one, second one, third one. And here's the minor version directly across from it. And then here's the ones on the middle strings. First one, second one, third one. And then the minor ones right next to it. So hopefully it's a clear guide for you just to look and see. And here's how you can practice it. You can take whatever song. And it's good to have variation. That's how you kind of develop motor skill and stuff, to have variation. So all of you probably have like a couple charts stuffed in your guitar case or something, or in the back of your trunk or whatever. I use folders a lot because I like to like have slip covers and just turn one page for tunes, but I would never clean out the folders. And so you'd have like a couple months of songs stuffed in there, which was really useful sometimes if you forgot a chart. But you just pick a song and take one shape. Let's say I'm going to pick one shape. And I marked out where the root is in all of these, so you can practice that. And you could just take, like, let's say we're going G to D. You can, like, think, okay, here's the root right here on this string. Where am I going to move that so it's now a D? And you could see that. Or up here. And then we have an E minor, and I know I can change that slightly to look like that. And then I have a C, which I know I can look like that. And you just read with one shape. And that can help a lot as you're just going through the neck and learning to just burn that one shape into your mind. And then you pick another shape and another shape until you have all of them. And once you do that, see, this is what I'm going to get comments in like the feedback. And like, he talked about this thing. It's just like not applicable. This is. Let me give like just something to a little bit more of the advanced players. And I'm happy to work with any of you like during this whole conference every day if you want to work on this stuff. But do you know like the circle of fifths, circle of fourths that ring a bell? It's somewhere out there in like theory and stuff like that. That's a great tool for practicing. Just go around the circle. You don't have to understand what all that does. You just... It's kind of like this theory thing, which I don't even want to explain, because that's not the whole point right here. But it's a circle of keys, basically, that goes like this. Sorry, no sleep last night.
St. Patrick, if people go to the seminar or two to the solo instrument workshop,
yeah.
That one has circle fifths on page one of it.
Oh, sweet. Okay, great. That saved me about another 20 seconds. So I can go through this. And I can practice. This is like a song almost. It's not really a song. Sojourn has a tune. My God and King. Da, 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 da. You know what that is? And it goes through this weird chord cycle, which is awesome. So I don't know what song it is. I'll try to post it just because it's so interesting. Yeah. So anyways, I could take one of these shapes. Like let's take this one. The root's right here. And let's say I'm good at knowing where the notes are, which I will talk about that. Because as an electric player, you really need to be able to get all over the neck. And you need to work on this stuff, even if it's just one shape at a time. I'm going to take this C, and then I'm going to go, I like to go, you can go either way you want. But this takes you through every single key. It goes through all 12 keys. A flat, D flat, G flat, F sharp. Don't fall asleep. I don't want to lose you here. And I just use this as a guide. Here's the C chord. Now, where's that chord as an F? Now, where's that chord as a B flat? Now, where's that chord as an E flat? Where is it? Right there. Where is it as an A flat? Where is it as a D flat? And once you go around the circle, you just played every one. There's no more of them. You just got them all. It's 12. Think about...
Take the shape and go around.
Yeah, just take that shape. And where's this a C? Okay, because I know the root's right there. So I'm going to move it. And now I'm going to find an F. Okay, it's right there. So now the next one is, I'm just going around like that. Or you can go around that way. It sort of doesn't matter. It's a tool for breaking you out of the typical progressions of like, oh, I always go from like a C to an F in all these songs. And so this kind of helps you. Another way you can do it, and this is, again, kind of an advanced thing. Then we'll go back to kind of basic stuff or a mix of it all. You can take it in one location. And not just take one around, but you can take one location right here. And they call going, well, I won't mention that. They call it cycle four or cycle five, but we don't have to talk about that now. You can take this and practice these chords like this in one spot of the neck. C, F, B flat, E flat, E flat, A flat, D flat, G flat, B, E, E, A, D, G, C. You can do it up here. C, F, B flat. Which one's next? E flat. Where's E flat? There or here. There's multiple places you can play them, and that helps you. That's actually pretty hard, and I would make my students practice it with a metronome and try to get up to a certain speed, so every click you change chords, and you think through this, and this takes it out of the context of chord progressions, and it's a real kind of woodshedding thing, so that you just see every version of any chord anywhere on the neck. And do you agree that that would be useful? Okay, so... Don't write a bad review. Okay, this is really, really useful. You can. It's not like I'll get fired. Because I know this is good for you also. So do we have like questions about that? Is this like disconcerting to you? You're like, what are you talking about? Could you do it one more time? You can do this with any chord.
I like the explanation that's right about going around that, especially for practice. When do you ever practice like a bend and all that stuff?
Are you talking about getting to know more single note stuff?
Yeah, when you start to do single note stuff.
That's a great...
How do you transition those together? Do they really don't?
Well, like I said before, I find... You know, I used to think like soloing is about single note stuff, but your chords are like a map to where it sounds good. And so, you know... let's go back to our song. thinking like, where am I going to start? Well, let's start around this chord right here. And let's see... Here's one good thing to mention. It's a myth that there are just magical people out there who just, the most amazing solo just flows from their fingers. because they heard it in a dream, you know, and it just sort of happens. You know, we sort of think like that. They're like, man, that guy did that. He must have just like had something good for dinner. He's just amazing. He's just incredible. He just thinks like that. But 70% of the stuff that you improv is stuff you've done before. Like when we're talking, we're improvising like crazy. But we've said these words before. We've been in similar situations and stuff. We've had to explain things or whatever, put these combinations together. And so you really need to sit with this stuff. And I think of it like carving out something. I was privileged to watch this great session in a studio. This really great player. And they were doing some improv stuff, and it was just amazing. He's really famous. And they got done with doing this recording thing, and you know, the person said, like, you know, do you mind if I see like what you do before you post this? Because, you know, I'm not so much like a studio player. I'm more of like a carver. And so some of the, you know, I thought that's really freeing to know that this, you know, really famous guy prefers to sort of like, you know, carve an idea, sort of think about it. And that's how I tend to come up with parts. When I actually practice a song, four parts, and this will go back to your single note thing, I will think about, like, what are the chords for this? And I'll, like, practice it on different parts of the neck. And so something sort of pops out, like, ooh, that sounds cool. Or I like this up here. Or when you do stuff like that, like, say you have to solo over, like, they had that little section in Come Praise and Glorify. And I was just trying to think, should I come up with something new? Should I just sort of do what they did? I sort of like did an in-between thing. But just getting to know the chord progression, you can do anything. You know, it starts off with C minor to something else to A flat. But I would actually play through the chords. And I would make exercises out of these things too. I would do like, you know, sweep picking through the chord changes and stuff just to practice your sweep picking. But just to get that in your ear. And when you start like, just like practicing, like, let's take just this chord progression, C, F, G. That's C, F, G in that part of the neck. But I could do this. Maybe I'm hearing something else, like. That. What if I went lower? And now I'm hearing. And so I'm following my ear. I'm starting to carve stuff out. You start to get ideas. And this is a great way to practice chords because you have to find them. And it's a great way to come up with parts and familiarize your way with yourself with a tune. And it's kind of a more interesting way to practice because cycle four can be a little bit like, but it can be a way to familiarize yourself with and just kind of engage yourself in practicing because you're working on something that you're going to do on Sunday. And that's probably sometimes the best way to practice because you're actually going towards a goal. You're motivated to do it. You're thinking, I'm just going to, you know, one thing I really need to do is get to know the neck and like this zone a little bit more. So let me try to find out. I'm just going to spend the next month trying to find those chords around here. And it's not going to be all in one day. It might be, you might get it done in 8 hours, but not 8 hours in one day, 8 hours in the course of 2 months. And it's just going to like really stick in your brain there and you're going to own it then. Does that make sense in terms of like a way to practice and stuff? So really carving that out. But now you could take any of those and make a melodic. Like let's take this G. Let's do a better song too. I'm going to be the acoustic guy. Let's see. Here we go. Okay, this is typical of any chord progression we might normally play. Tapping in a tempo. Sort of coming up with an idea, you know. I sort of heard that in my head, but did that sound like a melody or a chord? A little bit like a chord, but it was more melodic. And you can be very melodic with your chords, and that's kind of like a roadmap for where can I go to sound good. And all I did was play a G chord, with messing around with notes around it. So that's usually not something we have a trouble doing. It's just the confidence, like, what if I put my finger there? You know, and it could be, you know, really awful. Or it could be really excellent, you know, like, wow, I can do that. Now around this shape, and if you don't, like, if this is all like cycle four, my head's going to explode. You could think, I'm just going to take one shape and what notes around it sound good. That's a very valid way of thinking. You don't have to know all the notes throughout the neck to come up with something good by any means. Just think, okay, here's that chord. Okay. Okay. And you've got like a scale around that shape. You know, now that's more of a melody. And that tends to be way more interesting than this. I know a scale in this position. You know, that sounds like a scale. But when you think more chordally and melodically, that helps you be more intervallic. Fancy word for when we play a scale, we often have a preference for moving a certain way in seconds, if you know what that means. If you don't, it doesn't matter. Or you can move in third. You know, something like that. But why not six? Or, you know, the things that come out from just skipping around your shapes. And that's where these chord shapes are so useful for you, because it's like a visual roadmap. I can see that. It looks like that chord. You know, and you'll come up with weird jumps that you wouldn't normally think of. Does that make sense? So these can be really great roadmaps for creativity. Just explore around it. And again, pick one shape if that's all you need. Or if that's all you like feel like your threshold will allow for. Because, you know, you just start small. You don't have a ton of time to practice all the time. Sometimes not at all. And so, you know, just take it easy, but keep moving forward like that. Question?
Yeah. How do you think about, like...
We'll go back to single notes, too. Because right. We need to talk about that.
That was kind of related. How do you think about, like pitch bends and things like that? Because, like, after you bend the note, it's not in that shape anymore. Like, which ones are good to do that?
Well, you could take like a scale idea, and this could go to scales, because you're just bending up to a note that's up in the scale. Like I could do this, or I could do this, and that's just a different sense. That's the same thing as doing, but it has kind of a different feel. Is that sort of what you meant? How do you know?
Bending up like a full third.
If I'm understanding correctly, you're talking about like bending in a shape and stuff, or
meaning like let's say the guitar is playing a G, you mm-hmm. want to play a note that's in the G. How would you bend it without like bending all the way up from like G to B? Like,
you're talking about being like accurate in your bending, kind of a thing.
Like. What notes can you play that are outside of that shape?
Sort of any. This maybe sounds like a non-answer, but sort of anything that sounds good. you know, you could also have a theory answer. You know, things that are within the scale and stuff. You know, you can bend. All you're doing is playing like that note now and then that note. And if you do a huge bend, you know, it's going up there. But I don't know if I might just be really misunderstanding your question. I feel like I am.
You're playing that shape, and you're saying like you can play a G, or then you can go up to a B. That's still in the chord, but mm-hmm. I don't really want to bend that far up. If I just want to bend like a half step or a whole step, where's mm-hmm. a good place to do that? Where it'll sound good?
Oh, well, that you can see by kind of getting to know the scale around the chord, and you could do it one of two ways. Be like, I don't want to learn any scale shape, so I'm going to take one chord shape, and I'm just going to like, nope, that's a bad note. That's a good note. So I'm just going to find. Nope. You know, you just trial and error. You can hear the bad ones, right? Yeah. And you can find the good ones until you just remember around that shape. It's going to be a lot the same, actually. It's going to be very much the same. And so when you see like a half step, like or like a little like fret to fret, that's a little half step bend. When you see a full step, that was not quite accurate, but... And you can sort of play a scale with bends, and that can give you an awareness of that. But I find the scale thing really helps a lot with knowing like where you can bend and stuff. If that gets to your question?
Sure.
Sure? Okay. And if we can talk more after. What's that?
Shapes are really good for, you know, just being able to ad-lib, which is something horrible.
Yeah, it's because they're safe spots. That's one of the reasons.
And like the single notes, it's good to know that your Ionian scales and your Phrygian scales to figure out how they...
Yeah, he just mentioned some like things that probably cause fear and trepidation in some people. He mentioned modes.
I have no idea how to tastefully put a mode down.
Here's what you do with modes. You forget about them. Because, honestly, really, because unless you're playing jazz, like, you know, or you have this sound. You know, that was kind of a Dorian thing. He's asking about modes, which we just don't have time to talk about. But I'm happy to, like, explore that throughout. But you don't really have to think about that so much. You can really use your ear. It's more important to get to know the scale. And where are we with time? Two minutes. Okay. Let's talk about scale stuff. Because this is so necessary. So necessary. And I'm telling you, we'll just unlock the neck for you. And it's a way to practice scales that seems maybe too easy, but I can make it hard for you. Let's take a C chord. And let's play a C scale going up and down the string. So a lot of guitarists tend to have like a fear of heights. You know, they don't want to go up. Beyond a position that you know, and you get stuck in these boxes. And so this is it's called the three-point approach. It's given to me by this great jazz player named Sean McGowan, McGowan. Phenomenal player, you should check him out. But talks about a three-point approach. The boxes are one because that kind of goes back and forth, but also there are patterns that go this way. And this will really help you out, especially on electric. So let's play a C scale. Let's start on the lowest note possible. When I tell the student to do that, they usually say something like this or do something like this. But this is the lowest note because you want this to be the available stuff for you as a C scale. So I start on E. And so it's really important to do this. Look at the note, say the note, play the note. So E, F, G, A, B, C, D, E. Hop over to the 12th fret and go down. A, G, F, E, D, C. And make sure that don't cheat. You have to say the note, you have to see the note, and you have to go up and down the strings, not just using your ear, D, C, B, A, G, B, C, D, E, F, G, A. And I guarantee if you haven't done this before, it's going to be hard going backwards knowing what you're playing. And when he showed me that, I was like, that's easy. It's just C. You know, I know C pretty well. But then we were playing the tune like All the Things You Are. And he said, okay, let's just go up in C. Go up in C. And now go down in A flat. You know, and now go... Oh, sorry. bad example. Go up in D. Go down in F. And knowing the notes and seeing those notes, so that can be a hard way to do it. But you could just pick one full different key and say, I'm going to practice D today. Let's start on the lowest note. And it really helps. There's some great resources, which I'll have to list on the blog because we don't have time. But this guy, Carl Verkade, V-E-R-K-A-D-E, does this like guitar for worship thing. Great ambient stuff, like directions for ambient playing. But he has on his Bandcamp page all of these like 8-minute pads in every key, and they're really sweet. They just go on forever, and you can just practice in the key of C, you know, all your chords and all your scales and stuff, and it really helps kind of engage you more because it's not just, you know, you in a room with a single guitar sound. But that's one way, going up and down that, and you can just pick a key and practice B flat or something, or practice the keys that you're playing in all the time on church, or just for this coming up Sunday, or you know you always play in E, so you're just going to practice E for 6 months, because that's all you have time to think about. And that's good. You're going to get better. But if you start in C, if you know where C is, it's not hard to think about where a C sharp is. And then that can really help you as you're moving these chords around and seeing, you know, where to put this stuff until you just forget about it, like learning a language, and you just think like that. You just, like when you're doing this, you're doing so many different inversions of every chord down in open position, but you just know that like a C. You know this like a G. You know this as an F. Why not do that right here? And right here, and right here, and right here, and right here. So this entire thing is a palette for you with scales. The other way to do that is to go across the neck, E, F, G, A, B, C. And don't just play the scale, but say the notes, and then go up a position and go back. A, G. This is harder. F, E, D, C, B, A, G, F. You get all the way to the bottom and scoot up, then go across, then go up, and you kind of gradually go through the neck up and down the strings, back and forth across the strings, saying the notes. That's really important. Say the notes. Play the notes very slowly. You can do it with chords. Let's pick a C chord. What's the lowest note you can play in a C? A C chord is C, E, G. Let's play a C chord on the first string melodically. And then you're doing all these skips and stuff, trying to find the C's, trying to find the G's, trying to find the E's. And I guarantee this stuff will help you. If you do this consistently for the next couple months, email me if this does not allow you to see the fretboard so much more easily. You can do it with pentatonic scales, major scales, any scales, arpeggios, anything that you want to do. Thinking up and down the strings. You can think as if you just had two strings instead of six strings. And do scales. And there are patterns that exist going up and down the strings just like there are that way. And all this stuff just feeds into your creativity. Now, I just gave you a bunch of stuff that would take, you know, that's good fodder to practice. And this is all in the packet. And this is all available, you know, from getting in touch with me. But all these things really help you to get to know the neck. Chords, scales, they start to go like this and kind of melt together until you just really know like where to go. And I use, you know, single notes, triads, power chords, all that stuff melodically, all that stuff chordally, all that stuff with swells and the ambient things with the delay tricks and the reverb tricks we were talking about. So hopefully that's helpful for you and it gets you started and maybe on fire a little bit for practicing this year and some direction. If you have any more questions, I'm happy to sort of talk a little bit here too. So. You know, if you're a little bit more of a beginner, you know, come talk to me before, you know, so I don't want you to walk away frustrated. I want to engage with you with what you can take away and really help you as much as I can. Question.
Yeah, as an instrumentalist, it's been taught that solos are 90% for inspiration and 10% inspiration.
Yeah, that's like genius, yeah. 99%, yeah, totally. It's that carving out idea. It often just doesn't come to you. It's great, like, expression, improvisation, I think, comes from the overflow of your preparation. So you put all this work into it, and then you have ideas that just seem like they come like that because you put tons of hours into making that available in your ears. So
you know, it's how many hours?
Oh, lots of hours.
So I've just transitioned from acoustic to another instrument to electric. And I've gone from leading worship at a multi-thousand for one of 100 members.
Yeah.
And no electric players. And so I'm doing everything. I'm like loop pedaling. Like,
do you have a band?
Yeah, we've got two bands.
Okay, so you have like
electric players.
Okay.
And so same thing you found out, like every time I would go on electric, I'd find myself turning around like picking the tempo.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, don't do what I'm doing, you know. And so
that can be tricky.
What I wanted to know was that, like, when it comes to, like pedals, because I can work somewhat around with different voicings, but what I'm finding is, like, I'll click, like, I'll have, like, my compression on or something or sustain, and I'll click off with one pedal, and all of a sudden I'll hear, like, this clack, 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 like, in my...
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, like, where the heck did that come from? And some of, like, the things on the ends are loose. I'm working with all Boss, like, that's probably one.
All what?
All Boss pedals, like, cheap.
That's actually, they can be cheap, but they're, like, really durable.
Yeah.
So, since he's a good area to check for Craigslist, because there's a lot of gear that goes through there, and that's the best place to get cheap stuff, Craigslist. I've gotten so much stuff on Craigslist, and that's a way to save a lot of money.
Okay, you don't have to go, like, because I went out and bought a couple of whatever they were.
It's fine. You might be able to...
pedals, but then I returned them because they were too specialized for what I needed, you know?
Yeah, you know, delay, overdrive, basic sort of stuff is really good. Volume pedal might be really useful for you. But that could be, like, you know, just what you need right there. You can use it kind of like, I like to use acoustic or electric a little bit like an acoustic. Make sure the delay's not on too much or at all. And you can't really strum the same heavy with the same heaviness. And you have to really play with, like, the pickup and stuff to find a good sort of...
Stuff dying on
that can be that might be from a pedal that maybe needs some tuning up or needs to be replaced, because sometimes the on off can be noisy and that'll feed into the delay and then it'll delay that.
That's what happened. It was like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And just real quick, this bar right here.
This is a MIDI control for this.
Okay.
It's specifically for this timeline pedal. Okay. And this has 99 banks in there, which is hard to get through. Like, if you want 74, you know, it's hard to get into that Ice Wonder. And so this thing is a programmable MIDI thing. This company, Disaster Area, makes it for these timelines. And so now I can have 5 presets. A really great pedal that I recommend to a lot of students and a lot of beginners is that Line 6 DL4. It's a green pedal because it has the presets, and you can, it has a tap tempo too, and you can save different sounds. This, I can set it to have 5 different presets. They make smaller ones too, like a 3 or a 4. And then I have another bank of that, of 5. And then it gets really quickly into the looper. Not having to hold down a button for like 10 seconds, 2 seconds.
I mean, I appreciate that because I've been doing the DD20, whatever. The thing, the
ball. DL4? Or no, the DD20?
Yeah,
that's a great pedal.
It's always a pain because, like, keep singing that chorus. I'm going to switch my delay.
And you can have settings on it, but it's not as quick to get to them.
Yeah.
I don't think, or maybe it is. I think
it's a 4 sweep settings.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Okay, you can do that. So if you know how to get around quickly, I think, do you cycle through them, though?
Yeah. You need 4.
So with the DL4, you have this, this, and this. You'd be like, short delay, long delay, middle delay.
And so,
yeah, you can find those. Definitely don't pay for a used. They're like 300 are new. They're like $300 out of the off the shelf, but usually around 150. You know, check Cedarville too, like Dayton area, because Cedarville has a classifieds list. There are a lot of bands from the university up there, like traveling bands, and they're always selling gear. Yep, they're always selling gear.
Yeah. Play rhythm guitar. I'm not sure if rhythm electric guitar, but I pretty much have been stuck in the whole acoustic and then switching to guitar like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty much staying in the bar chord range the entire time. And I feel like I know I'm stepping on piano players.
You will, because those bar chords naturally have like power chords built into them, which is a lot of low end in your chord. And so sometimes those power chords are great. Sometimes without the rest, because when you have like the rest of the chord too, it's really complex and it's big and it's messy with overdrive. But, you know, if you just wanted to take a really basic way of thinking about this, take your bar chord, like, let's say you're doing that bar chord, and just chop the strings off from here on and just play that part. And that's that shape. And so that's how you can think about it too. It's just the front, or just, you know, just play, sometimes I'll, you know, play just the front end of a big chord. Like, we went into that, My Redeemer's Love Is. My Redeemer's Love Is. And I just did, like, a part of this A chord, just the front part, because you don't need the big, fat bottom part, because a lot of the rest of the band is covering that. And so that'll allow you to get kind of more higher up on the neck, you know. Yeah, totally, because you think about, like, this frequency range of your whole band. You got, like, your kick, you got your bass and stuff down here, you got piano player, and a lot of people throw in the mid-range with, like, strumming or, like, just playing these low chords on electric and then piano, where you can just get up and sort of spread it out, and it makes it sound bigger, more open. These are key for stuff like that.
So the first thing you would start practicing is my triad.
Is get to know those chords. They're so useful. So useful.
Where is, and that's on in that packet as well?
Yeah, go to the website and check it out. And if you have trouble finding it, you know, get in touch with me on the via email or something like that. If you get like stuck with like, how do I practice this? I'll be posting stuff like that on the website, but you can just get in touch too. Thanks for being here.